No dairy, no sweets, only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school. My household smell like soul food, bro. Curry falafel.
What's up, Beardos? Welcome to episode 89 of The Bearded Vegans. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com. And, you know, you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we will talk about what we've been eating, discuss the news, and then dissect the public response to films like Okja and What the Health by asking the question, should we promote imperfect activism?
Nice.
Changing up the script a little bit on there, Andy.
What?
You can always reach us. What did you say? Oh. You can. I don't like it one bit. Re-record. So we don't have too much to report on the food front. I've been eating Gardein chicken strips as usual. Andy, what have you been eating?
Well, you haven't been trying to reach your daily requirement of 6 hot dogs.
I will say, I was disappointed when Andy sent me a video of himself pulling out, it was a video and it started off with the oven, a shot of the oven. And I was like, oh, I know what's coming next. And he opens up the oven and pulls out Gardein chicken tenders. And I knew that was coming, but only 4. And I was like, not even the whole pack.
That was all that was left from a previous eating experience.
That means you ate even less. Yeah. Fewer last time. Disappointing.
Sorry, Paul. I'm not living up to my true potential.
But have you been eating anything, Andy?
Yeah, you know, not too much. I went out to Vegetarian Summerfest, which is in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, and it is located at the University of Pennsylvania Johnstown campus. It's a college town. There's not a lot going on in it. I did repeatedly celebrate that Taco Bell has the vegan rice bag.
Oh, I went to Taco Bell last night, too.
Yeah, very interesting, Paul. So I did go there a couple times, but otherwise I was just sort of doing grocery runs and eating some of the food that was available at Summerfest, which is, you know, nothing that's like wildly amazing, but, you know, they had vegan pizza every day and salads. Nice. And things of that nature. On the way out, though, on my drive, I stopped at Vegan Treats.
Oh, I didn't get a pic of that?
Because why not? Well, Paul, the pic made it up to our old Instagram account.
Did it?
And I'm only bringing this up because I want everyone listening, all you beautiful beardos, to go out and check our Instagram. Look at this picture, and you'll scroll through, and you'll be like, Vegan Treats is desserts, but I don't see any desserts going on. Look for a picture of what appears to be a hamburger, a cheeseburger, in fact, with cheese and lettuce and ketchup and whatnot. And that is indeed not a hamburger. It is, in fact, a cheesecake.
Gasp.
Yes. So I had to get it just because I was like, this will make a good picture.
I totally did see that. And I remember seeing it. I did not realize that was Vegan Treats, though.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. They were doing some fun, like, 4th of July stuff. And, you know, fuck 4th of July. But, yay for cool food.
Yeah.
So while I was at Vegetarian Summer Fest, did get to spend some time chatting with Colin and Victoria, the two lone beardos. They're not lone, I guess, if there's two of them, but the two beardos that did come out to Summer Fest. And Summer Fest is an interesting format compared to what I normally do, because normally I'm doing a veg fest. It's one day, maybe it's 2 days, and it's very busy, you know, in theory, very busy for the entire time. And Summerfest is a conference, so it's less people in a veg fest, and it's drawn out over 5 days. And the way they have it set up is the vendors are where the food hall is, so people are only coming there when it's mealtime. They're not there milling about in between. So for me, it's almost like camping out for 5 days in my van, and then for 2 hours every mealtime, I just go and like sell some shirts for a little bit. It's really cool because it gives you a chance to actually talk to people and you get to see them day after day, check up on them. So got to have a lot of chats with Colin and Victoria. So that was awesome. Thank you for coming by, picking up some buttons. And also because I had a lot of downtime and because I didn't have a lot of food to talk about, people have asked us in the past about our book recommendations, and I have some because I did a bunch of reading while I was just sitting there in this dining hall area with no cell phone service or Wi-Fi for the vendors. So the first one, I actually didn't finish this one while I was there. I recently finished it, but it's a book called Just Food by James McWilliams, and it's not a fully vegan book. It doesn't come to a vegan conclusion, but essentially it looks at the locavore notion that food miles are like the ultimate determinant of how ethical food is. and examines that from a number of different angles, and in general makes a very strong case for not consuming any land animal, at least. There's some arguments made for like aquaculture, which still seemed unnecessary by the book's standards, but you know, it looks at, you know, GMOs, it looks at organic, and all of these factors that a lot of people either take as like definitely good, definitely bad, talks about the nuances of those things. Definitely gave me a greater understanding and a greater appreciation for these issues, and also made me more confused than ever about a lot of them. You know, sometimes you're reading a book and you're like, just tell me what to do, damn it. This isn't necessarily a book that does that, but it does make a very strong case for why you should not be consuming animals, and in many cases, they're byproducts as well.
Handy, can you define for us what a food mile is?
A food mile is the amount of miles that have that your food has traveled to reach you. So say your apples were grown in Australia and then flown out to the US. They have a lot of food miles. Whereas like local food is, oh, this is just like 3 miles, you know, away from the farm. It was grown, and therefore this is more ethical.
Okay.
And it kind of tears that notion apart. Doesn't say local food is inherently bad and acknowledges a lot of reasons why local food can be good, but that it shouldn't be the be-all, end-all. It kind of acknowledges that, like, people, like I was just saying, they want people to tell them what to do. They want a simple mantra, you know, eat local, very simple, very easy to understand, and on the surface, sounds like a great idea. I'm supporting my local community. Mm-hmm. Stuff doesn't have to drive really far, et cetera, et cetera. So that is Just Food by James McWilliams.
Nice.
While I was at the conference, I finished Even Vegans Die, which is a book by Ginny Messina, Carol Adams, and Patty Brightman. And I will be speaking with Ginny at the New Jersey Veg Fest on October 8th. We're going to have a panel about like disease shaming and body shaming and fat shaming and these kind of issues, food shaming, all the shaming in the vegan community. And this book touches on a lot of those issues. It's kind of designed for, in many places, kind of like older vegans, and talks about how like as vegans we like to portray ourselves as immortal and we can't die, and there, you know, there's the Dr. Greger book that's like how not to die. Dr. Greger actually wrote the foreword for this book, and he said, not in this foreword necessarily, he's like, it's called How Not to Die, not How to Not Die, essentially. Like, that's his like little like play on the semantics of the whole thing. And it's like his book is about how to like live a healthy and fulfilling life through your diet, but their book you know, is a companion to that and acknowledges that despite, no matter how healthy we eat, literally all of us are gonna die. And a lot of it is about planning for your end of life, making sure that your legacy is intact, making sure that maybe your donations are gonna go where they want to go, talking about getting a will. And, you know, say you love this organization and you want all your money to go to this organization or whatever it is. Like, talks about these things that I think a lot of us aren't thinking about. I know I'm certainly not thinking about it, Paul. We're young. We're young guys. Yeah. We're cool. We're hip. We're young. So, like, a lot of that's not really on our minds, but now it is. And there's also a great portion of the book dedicated to the food shaming and disease shaming and, you know, the idea that if you're an unhealthy vegan or if you got cancer as a vegan, that you're not doing it right. And there's something wrong that you did. And yeah, so I highly recommend that. It's a pretty quick read. It's like 117 pages. I had only read 20 of it before the I got to the event, and I breezed through the rest of it in like a day and a half. So definitely recommend. And then the final book that I'll recommend is Aphorism by Af and Sile Coe. Pretty sure that's how they pronounce Sile. Apologies for that. And this is a book that is, you know, AFCO is a name that a lot of people recognize, Black Vegans Rock. And this is a collection of essays, most of which appeared on their website. They're both sisters. And a couple of other ones, some things have been revised. And it is, I'm about a third of the way through it at this point. I had to stop casually reading it in between customers at this event because it's something that you really have to think about when you read it. You know, like when I was reading Even Vegans Die, it's like one of those things where it's like, I generally agree with this and understand it, and I'm just getting more details to fill in my knowledge about this subject. And Aphorism, a lot of the essays are things you're like, I agree with this, but maybe it's framed from a whole different angle, and like things that for me as like a white guy and viewing the world through my lens, like I had to like sit down and be like, okay, what am I supposed to take away from this? What does this mean? How is this going to affect my activism going forward? So it's challenging me in my views and hopefully strengthening activism and things that we will hopefully be talking about further as the show goes on. So nice. That is Aphorism. So those are three lengthy book recommendations for y'all. Paul, anything interesting going in that mouth of yours?
Just the Gardein. Are you implying that I eat books, Andy?
What knowledge have you been ingesting literally through your mouth? So with that said, let's move on into the news. Paul, you found something pretty interesting.
You said that as if I never find interesting things, Andy.
Unlike your usual dreck.
The first one, Argentinian president institutes vegan Mondays. So this is from vegnews.com. Last week, Argentina's Casa Rosada, the equivalent of the White House in the United States, announced its commitment to strictly serving vegan food on Mondays. The 554 employees of the Casa Rosada, including President Mauricio Macri, apologize for pronunciation, decided to exclude animal products from their diets one day per week to benefit the environment and for the purpose of starting a conversation about the health issues surrounding the high meat diets of Argentine citizens.
Interesting. What do you make of that?
Well, I'm surprised. So this is an article I'm reading from Veg News. They're using the word vegan, which to me like implies something different than what maybe is going on, because it seems like, well, to benefit the environment, but then also starting a conversation about health issues. Because if this is like a purely, I'm happy that it's happening regardless, but it seems like it's maybe more so from the health aspect of it than from maybe the animal ethics aspect.
Yeah, it seems like in general people are advocating from the environmental angle a lot more. I think especially when I see these government initiatives, municipality in LA decided to do Meatless Monday. It's almost always like an environmental thing. And we've talked about this a bunch, but it seems like it's just so much easier for people to swallow. People generally accept that it's good to not harm the environment. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, when like a restaurant's like, hey, we don't offer takeout anymore unless you bring your own thing for the environment, people are like more accepting of that than if a restaurant was like, hey, we're going all vegan now because of the animals or something. Like, we're all going vegan because of the environment. You know, it seems like that's something that's like generally accepted as like a good thing, even if a lot of people don't take actions in their daily life to follow through with it. It's like, oh, the environment. Of course, we all love the environment. Yeah, why would we want to hurt it?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, it's a good thing that it's happening. Well, maybe it'll lead to something. I mean, I think it will, if it's affecting, you know, it says 554 people. It's like, you know, I'm sure, I would imagine that that's going to stick with some of them. You know, or it's actually going to, or hopefully open up doors for some of them.
Yeah. Or bead curtains.
Or what?
Or bead curtains.
So,
call back to a conversation we had earlier that no one here was a part of. So, I mean, yeah, I guess I fall in the favor of this is a good thing. I think it'd be hard to expect something like this to be like, hey, we're serving all vegan food from now on. Hopefully it could lead to that.
Yeah.
You know, I appreciate that they say that it's, you know, to start a conversation. It does send a certain message, but is it this kind of ties into our main topic. Is this like an imperfect thing that we're supposed to be supporting? Because it's also sending the message that it's okay to do horrible things to animals the other 6 days of the week.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess we'll talk about this more later, whether or not we see it as effective, but this definitely ties into what we will talk about later. Overall, I think it's a good thing.
It's hard to ever see like any amount of reduction as bad. It just depends how it's framed, you know. I'm thinking about all of our like reducitarian conversations and stuff, but
I think it like I'm more likely to be favorable towards something like this. And I guess I have not done enough research to know what led to this, but I'm more likely to be in favor of this than like a vegan person getting this to happen. You know, if this was just like a bunch of non-vegans that are now eating less meat on their own, it's like, that's good, I think, versus a vegan taking a step backwards, which is what I feel like for the reducitarian thing. Is it's kind of like vegan people taking a step back.
Yeah, but there are a lot of vegans. I would say the Meatless Monday campaigns are primarily organized and run by vegans.
Yeah.
Got nothing to say about that, Paul?
Got nothing to say about
Yeah, I don't know. It, to me, it's like, okay, I think it's better that this happens than not. I'm wary of the fact that it kind of sends the message that it's okay to take half measures. But I also, I'm like, isn't this way better than them doing nothing? And hopefully it can lead to, oh, everyone like as long as the food is good. And if everyone's like, oh, yeah, the food's great, I'm not missing anything, I still feel full and energized. Maybe it could lead to more of a systemic change. And who knows what kind of influence the people working at, you know, their version of the White House, mm-hmm. what kind of influence they could have on others. Mm-hmm. Like, it's always good to have influential people becoming vegan and kind of spreading that to others.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously this article is written by Veg News. Who knows how many degrees of separation they are away from this story, but it says it's like the purpose is to start a conversation. So that seems to imply taking more steps going forward.
Yeah.
Anti-reducitarian.
Yes. Yeah, I'm for it. So good job. Good job, Argentina.
Yeah.
Hopefully some more places in the United States can take a page out of that book.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Andy, you're up.
I got some good news, Paul. Judge overturns Utah's ag gag ban on undercover filming at farms.
Yay.
I don't think we've talked about the specific case of the ag gag in Utah, but we're going to talk about the end of this case.
All right.
So essentially, for those who are not aware of what ag gag laws are, they are laws that prevent people from filming secretly at animal agriculture facilities. And usually they have some kind of stipulation in them that's like, if someone witnesses abuse, if someone was to film abuse, they would have to report it to the higher ups within, you know, 24, 48, 72 hours, something like that. They claim that that is for the animal safety. If something bad is happening, they should know right away. They shouldn't have to wait months or like a year for someone to be compiling a footage of all this horrible stuff. And then it gets released to the press, and it's this big thing where they're like, well, we could have just fixed this problem, you know, a day after it happened.
Yeah.
So that's kind of their argument. So this article is coming from NPR.org and talks about how the ban has been overturned, and then says the ban violates the First Amendment's free speech protections, U.S. District Judge Robert Shelby said. Shelby rejected the state's defense of the law, saying Utah had failed to show the ban was intended to ensure the safety of animals and farm workers from disease or injury. So that's good. This is like a good precedent that's being set. I don't know how much it'll apply to other states, but the fact that the judge saw through this bullshit excuse that this is for the animals' protection. Like, obviously, you know, this flies in the face of, you know, consumer transparency and people knowing what's going on with the food that they're eating. I don't really like using that argument because obviously we shouldn't be framing animals as food, but I do think it is something that gets people pissed off when they're like, yeah, you aren't allowed to see what happens to these animals before they arrive on your plate. Mm-hmm. And like, people should know that. People should have access to that information. So I think that this is good.
Me too.
Yeah. And the article concludes with a quote from a farmer. Did you read it already, Paul?
I accidentally looked ahead and saw one word that I think is you're going to highlight.
So this is the final quote is just, a farmer who supported the ban had said that he and his colleagues, quote, don't want some jack wagon coming in and taking a picture of them. I don't know if jack wagon has some other connotation than the one that's come up in my mind, but such a great insult. Such a great insult. According to the court citation of state records. So farmers not happy about this. And in my general experience, things that make the agriculture industry unhappy are typically better for animals than they are worse for animals. So good job, Robert Shelby, on overturning that ban, and hopefully we see this type of outcome anytime an ag gag law gets challenged.
Definitely.
So we got one more news story before we head into our final discussion for this episode. Paul, you came across this article about the situation that's going on. Tell us about it.
So this last article that I came across kind of, for me, opened up maybe a slightly broader discussion about our favorite Bearded Vegan's punching bag, PETA. And
never had a bad word to say about PETA, Paul. I know what you're talking about.
So this article comes from CambrianNews.co.uk. Animal rights campaigners offered to help save Taiwan toilets. PETA has written to Gwynedd Council to offer its financial support to keep the under-threat public toilets open. But its offer has one condition. A banner reading, "Meat stinks, go vegan," would need to be hung on the outside of the building. While public toilets are often known for having quite a stench, it's the meat industry that is the most foul, said PETA director Eliza Allen. This win-win solution would help keep the toilets open while providing residents with an important reminder that when it comes to animals, our health, and the environment, meat really does stink. So the reason why I'm including this is because it reminded me so much of a couple other kind of situations that PETA has tried to get itself involved in. Most notably, the time when PETA stepped in on the Flint, Michigan water crisis. This is an article from NBC News from July 2014. Which says, PETA to Detroit, go vegan for a month, we'll pay your water bill. And so essentially, I feel like we've talked about this before on the show. PETA was offering to pay people's water bills as long as they agreed to go vegan for a month. And this is a quote from that article. A PETA donor from Detroit approached us with the idea, and we said we'd be delighted in something that would help animals and people with overdue water bills at the same time. PETA sees it as a win-win. So there's a common thread between both these articles,
mm-hmm.
and that's PETA seeming to kind of capitalize on the misfortune of others to promote their own agenda. And I mean, obviously the toilet situation is not like a human rights issue, like the business in Flint, but it's still like, is PETA just, and this is such like a small town, you know, is PETA looking out like, oh, where are people in trouble and how can we exploit those people in order to promote veganism? And it just seems like, I don't know, like I hate the idea of, I mean, the Flint one is like gross. It's like disgusting that they would kind of try to capitalize on someone who has no access to water. But yeah, like, so I see this toilet situation, which is much more recent, as kind of similar to that, where it's like they're just kind of, and they say win-win situation, but it's more like, hey, we have this thing that you need. We have this money for so that you can get this thing that you need. And they're like dangling it in front of them like, oh, how badly do you want this? And like, are you willing to do what we're doing? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't know how much there is to be said about it, but then there's also, this is like, just as another example of PETA, you know, kind of trying to inject themselves into situations where they probably have no business being. There was the instance where they were handing out vegan jerky to that, in Oregon, to that like militia of cattle ranchers that took over that government building. And it was that whole big thing for like a week or two. And PETA just kind of came in and was like, hey, here's some vegan jerky. And they post, I don't know. I was just reading, cause I remembered that I was reading about it. And it's like, PETA has this article about that on their own website. And to me, it just seems like people from the outside that aren't vegan looking in on this would just be like, how could PETA be so oblivious to just like how they look, you know?
Yeah, and it's almost like, okay, here's people that are like super in need and we're going to give them some kind of stipulation for us helping them. And then here are these folks, the ranchers, that are like taking over government land, trampling on like land that like belonged to indigenous people, and you know, all these like negative, horrible things that are associated with them. And there's like, yeah, here's your food. Here's your free food. You don't have to do anything for it. You don't have to stand down or anything. We're just going to give you food because yeah. It's good publicity.
I didn't even think about it like that.
Yeah. It's like, whose side are you on? So, I mean, when I look at this public toilet situation, I do feel like it seems like it's like way less offensive
oh, yeah.
than the Flint thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I was trying to, like, look up and find out, like, what kind of significance do these public toilets hold? Do they play, like, a key component in the lives of people that are experiencing homelessness? And I couldn't really find anything that, like, spoke about that. I did find people that were talking about how this article from the Daily Post that said, vulnerable people, the elderly and people with children plan their journeys around whether or not there are toilets. How will tourists visit our beautiful seaside towns with their kids if all the public toilets are closed? Suffering from Crohn's has a massive impact on your life, and we need to go to the toilet. You have to go. So these are things that are not great for people, mm-hmm. but it doesn't really feel like it kind of rises to the level of Flint thing.
Oh, no.
So it feels less like they're exploiting some... And I far be it for me to defend anything PETA does. It feels less like they're really exploiting... a horrible situation. It's kind of framed as like these are just budget cuts for the government and we're going to close these things. You know, and like to me, it's like they're just buying advertising before, but there was no offer for advertising, but they're like, oh, you have to close? Well, how about we advertise on your thing and we'll pay for your toilets to stay open? And that seems like kind of a standard agreement that happens. That's why advertising's there, for like money.
Yeah.
And so it feels less horrible to me.
I don't know. But would you feel the same way with the Flint thing if instead of PETA saying, if we pay your, like if we pay for your water bill, you have to go vegan. Instead of that, it said, if we pay for your water bill, you have to put like a PETA billboard outside your, or like a PETA sign outside your house or something like that.
It still feels really gross.
Right?
Yeah.
But what's...
But it feels... I don't know. It feels less gross with the public toilet thing.
Why?
I don't know.
I don't exactly know either. And you're right. Because it's like... It's less of like a human... Less of like a human rights issue.
It's a degree of grossness. It's like... It's still gross. Like, if you can help, just help. But also, it's kind of like, oh... If they can keep them open and all they have to do is put a banner up that most people are going to ignore, like...
Yeah, but I'm not looking at it from the perspective of like how it would affect those people in that town as much as like PETA is actively searching out ways, like people who are under some degree of misfortune. Maybe it's tremendous and maybe it's just a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's like, how can we capitalize on that to push our agenda forward?
Yeah. Yeah. When you put it like that, I'm just like, oh, fuck this.
And I wonder how this comes across to the public, maybe not in this situation. Because if you're in that situation, maybe you're like, less so with the toilet thing, but you're like, okay, I need this thing. So like, I'm going to get it however I can get it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be happy that I have it now. But for people that aren't vegan outside of that situation, how does that come across? Like, I don't know. Cause they just keep using this word like win-win, but it just doesn't, to me, it doesn't feel like a fair win-win.
Well, why not?
Because on the PETA side, they are not affected one way or the other, whether or not you agree to this situation, you know? Whereas, I mean, yes, they will have one less advertisement out there, mm-hmm. but it's like they can just go pay somewhere else to get a highway billboard.
Yeah.
Versus like the toilets or Flint people. It's like, if they don't agree to this, like they are being affected by it.
So they're kind of held hostage by the whole thing.
Yeah.
Now, but is it, could you look at it that is in fact altruistic of them, because they could just go get a billboard that would not keep public toilets open. This just could put some money in some marketing executive's pocket, but instead they're choosing to advertise somewhere that, and with that money, it keeps open a public service.
I think with the Flint thing, I think it would have been a tremendous, it would have had a much more beneficial impact for veganism and for PETA if they had just paid some Flint residents' water bills. Because I think I saw it in the article. It's like, it was not, and when that article was written, I think it said only 5 people had come forward to take that deal.
Uh-huh.
And their water bills were like $100.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure PETA has $500 of money that they can spare.
Yes.
Like, think about how much better PR it would have been for PETA if the article just said, PETA helps out people.
Yeah.
And isn't shitty for once.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my comment was referring specifically to the toilets, but if we want to talk about the Flint thing in this regard, yeah, it would still be opportunistic, but they could pay the bills and the state would be like, hey, we're paying these water bills. And while we're talking about water, did you know how much water animal agriculture uses? It would still be icky and gross, but it wouldn't be like we're dangling your life over your head and you have to do what we say in order for us to help you.
Yeah.
So like, I agree with that, but answer my question, Paul.
What was your question?
Dodge my question. Is it actually altruistic of them if they choose to, instead of buying a billboard that will just give money into the pockets of people who already have money, the advertising executives, and instead they're like, we don't want this billboard. We're instead going to turn your bathroom into a billboard and keep your bathroom open. And that isn't that like nice of them to do that as opposed to when they could have just gone to a billboard?
I'm going to answer your question with another question.
You jerk.
Like, is the altruism of the action affected by what their intention is? Like, is the good naturedness of it, is how good they're being, how kind they're being towards these people, is that measurement affected by what their intention is? Because I don't think that they care about these people at all.
No, of course not.
So it's like, is someone being altruistic if they're doing something solely to benefit themselves?
Well, I mean, like if you were to look at it like this, say you went to an advertising agency and they're like, we have two options. They're both billboards, but if you pay for this billboard, your ad just goes up. If you pay for the other billboard, your ad goes up on it. And also we're going to like give school supplies to like 50 kids that are in need. Like, wouldn't you be like, yeah, I guess I would rather choose the one that's going to help some people if I'm going to be advertising regardless.
I suppose. I suppose.
I hate how much I'm defending PETA because I do feel like it sucks. I feel like it's opportunistic. It's taking advantage of the misfortune of others. And that's not in alignment with vegan values.
Yeah. I do see what you're saying. Is it's like, if you're going to do this, might as well help some people out along the way.
Yeah. But also I'm like, why is PETA focusing on this small town in Wales? You know, it's not like it's a huge population. Yeah. Like it's more about the news stories they're generating from doing this than it is about affecting the residents of that population. Yeah.
How did they find out about this?
I have no idea. They just like, they were like searching through their Scrabble letters and they didn't have any vowels. And they're like, Gwynedd, let me see if that's a word. And they Googled it and they're like, oh, it's actually a town and they have these public toilets.
Yeah.
We've been playing a lot of words with friends.
Yeah, I don't know. I you're right. You're right. It's like if with this toilet situation, if they had to choose one or the other, might as well choose the one that's going to help people. Still feels icky to me.
Yeah, because it's PETA.
Yeah.
They do gross things. Yeah, like I don't like in the scheme of things, if they had to put up a billboard, I would rather it go to something that's also going to help people. But I feel like they need to stop, like you were saying, stop looking for the misfortune of others to capitalize on.
Yeah.
Like, why not do something that's good and altruistic just on its own?
And also, weirdly enough, I agree with what you said. Like, if they're going to do something, might as well help out people like these people. But if it was, like, a more serious human rights issue, I feel like I would be more against it. I feel like it would be grosser.
Yes. Yeah, I think because this kind of feels a little more trivial.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel as bad to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the worst of the thing that they were going to help in order to like slap their like logo on it, the worse it is in my eyes. So
which is weird, which is like an interesting phenomenon. The things that probably need more help, I feel more shitty about them helping those things.
Yeah.
While also promoting,
because it's more dire and like the consequences for people if this doesn't happen seem less bad than if they get their like water bill turned off or they starve or, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah, yeah.
This is just like, okay, you have to find somewhere else to go to the bathroom.
All right. I think we've run this toilet dry.
Boy.
But that I think that led to an interesting conversation that was different than all the other PETA conversations that we've talked about.
Yeah, I feel so weird about defending them.
No, you were just playing devil's advocate.
That's true.
So on that note, let's get on to our topic of the week.
Yeah, so I wanted to do some follow-up from some of the film reviews that we had doing, because often when we're doing these reviews, generally speaking, we're talking about them like right as they're coming out. You know, we record the Oakjaw one like right after it became available on Netflix, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And What the Health, I think we reviewed that pretty early on, and it only recently became available on Netflix. So, you know, we make all of these like assumptions or guesses about how we think non-vegans will react to these films, and we give our assessment of if we think it's a good tool for advocacy, would we recommend these films? But, you know, when it comes down to it, these are only educated or semi-educated guesses that we can actually make. And even with any guess, no matter how much like thought we put into it, it's like we don't really know. And we're also looking at it from our own vegan perspective of people that have been vegan for quite a mm-hmm. while. And we have our views on things. And, you know, we never really know how the general public is going to react until it's out there. I think especially once these films get put on Netflix, that's what really gives them a huge boost. I was reading some article that was saying that if 2% of Netflix user base watches Oakjaw, that would be the equivalent of every single member of the ASPCA watching it. And if like 13% of Netflix user base watches it, that's the equivalent of every single person that supports PETA. And they have like a huge, you know, base of people that support them and get their texts and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like this one film.
Or their voicemails.
Or their voicemails. Paul got a little call from PETA as we were preparing for this episode, which has never happened before and is very creepy. So now that What the Health is out on Netflix and Oakjaw has been released, we're starting to finally see reactions coming in at a volume where we're able to sort of quantify, you know, overall, are people going vegan because of this? Are people questioning veganism? Like, how are people perceiving this? We don't just have like a tweet, two tweets, a Facebook post. We have like floods of tweets that we can look at and see how people are responding to these things. So I think that especially since Oakjaw, we just reviewed it in the last episode, and it has just been blowing up the internet. I've seen everybody talking about it. I've seen non-vegan friends talking about it, recommending it, saying they thought it was great. I've seen every vegan under the sun, for the most part, say, oh my God, it's incredible. It's the best vegan film we've ever seen, and everyone needs to see it. And, you know, I've seen other folks like ourselves and like Vegan Warrior Princess Attack did a really good dissection of the film that was critical of elements that we didn't really pick out. I think everyone should listen to that. And other reviews from people are like, the vegan message isn't quite there. And I think that that response is usually coming from us well-seasoned vegans who are used to kind of really analyzing and looking at this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I will say that in general, the response that I've seen is tons of people saying, I'm going vegan or vegetarian because of Oakjaw.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny you mentioned that, because I didn't realize that What the Health just came out on Netflix. Uh-huh. I forgot that we had like seen it very early on.
What yeah,
we,
episode 72 was when
we
pay saw,
for it. Well,
yeah.
But
I backed it on Kickstarter.
Yeah, and that's funny you mentioned that, because I was like very confused as to why all of a sudden all of my Instagram friends were posting about it. I saw a bunch of posts on Facebook. I was like, wait, why is this just randomly blowing up right now a month after? Why wasn't it blowing up when we were talking about it, is what I'm trying to say.
But I guess we're not that special, Paul.
Not that special.
I've even seen a lot of articles coming out of people saying, I'm going vegan because of this. Everyone's going vegan. A lot of the major organizations have kind of jumped on that and talked about that and reposted a bunch of the tweets. There's an article from The Hollywood Reporter that said, Oakjaw just might convince you to go vegetarian. Another one from HiddenRemote.com said, Oakjaw is making people go vegan. No, seriously. And in that article, they... I know this is seems like a punchline for a joke. But no, it lists a bunch of the tweets. So see, these are some of the tweets that have been coming out since Oakjaw came out. So Oakjaw was 10 out of 10. In other news, I'm vegan now. Oakjaw was the saddest thing I've ever seen in my life, and I'm heartbroken and vegan now. Bong Joon-ho did that. Oakjaw was marvelous, and I desperately want to go vegan now, despite how obnoxious it sounds. I just watched Oakjaw, and I'm speechless and now vegetarian. That was quite incredible and quite unexpected. And then finally, I've eaten meat all my life, but if anything was to convince me to go vegetarian, it's probably Oakjaw.
Hashtag vegan alert.
DJ Khaled's all over it.
Yeah.
Another article. Oakjaw made my carnivore girlfriend go vegetarian, from filmschoolrejects.com. Just read from that briefly. Last year for my girlfriend's birthday, she ordered and ate an entire pig from a Chicago barbecue joint, which that seems like so much animal.
Yeah, that's
must
gross.
Have been a baby pig. I don't know. Either way, real gross. She's an ex-cheesemonger, foodie, and walking Liz Lemon punchline. The only time I refer to her as lover is when meat comes right before it. She also came with me to see Oakjaw for its theatrical press screening. We cried the whole Uber ride back from the theater. She also did not order a full pig on her birthday this year. And then the author of that actually notes that they themselves are not vegan, but... If they do stop eating meat, it will be mammals, cows and pigs. So, and actually, I feel like that kind of last line almost leads to some of our fears that it is a film that's going to maybe cause people to stop eating pigs and cows, but continue to eat fish, especially, or chicken, which are the animals that are explicitly shown consumed in the film.
I'll still say, though, it's like, I don't know why I said I'll still say, I've never said this before, but... but at least I don't think it's necessary. I don't think the movie in itself, even though we talked about how the director said this, the movie itself is not promoting reducitarian. I don't think.
No.
Like directly, it's not saying that. Even though that's what some of the quotes from the director implied, that he's like, I think that people should eat less meat.
Yeah.
Which is very reducitarian. I don't think that that's what the movie implies, and I think that's important to bring up because. Yes, people might be making small changes at first, but it's like, who knows if that what that will lead to.
Yeah. So these responses, tons of people, there's way more than we've said on the show, of people saying, I'm going vegan, I'm going vegetarian, I'm never going to eat meat again. I don't know if you saw this, Paul. Netflix released a promo for Oakjaw that was like before Oakjaw, after Oakjaw. Did you see that?
No.
It's someone that's like going shopping in like the bacon section and it's before Oakjaw and the person just calmly puts the bacon in their package and then it's after Oakjaw and they walk to the bacon section and they're like crying and they're hysterical and like, you know, essentially just say like, you're going to look at bacon differently after you watch this film. Wow. So it's like Netflix is really pushing this film.
Yeah.
It's probably because we've talked about it and I've posted about it, but it's showing up in my feed as sponsored ads. And I've seen a lot of people sharing these ads that Netflix is putting out. They put out another one that was like, will it go make you go vegan? Will it not? And they showed tweets from opposing sides. So there was people that were like, amazing film, but I'm still going to eat meat. Like, obviously not everyone's going vegan after they watch this.
I thought when you said Netflix is promoting it so hard because of your posts, like you promoted it for Netflix. Like what you had said made Netflix promote it so much.
No, just how like when you're like, I wonder if adult diapers are on Amazon, you look for it. And then like for the next 3 months, adult diapers are your ads on Facebook. Just like one of those things.
It definitely did seem to get like, you know how Netflix at the very top, if you scroll up, there's always like one featured thing. Like it seemed like it was Oakjaw for a while.
Well, I will pull back the curtain for you, Paul, and say that those are very custom tailored.
Oh, really?
I was listening to an episode of the Slash Filmcast, and they were talking about how many different people have drastically different Netflix interfaces.
Yeah.
And like they were kind of framing it like it's hard for them to push certain shows, and like it's hard to find certain things on Netflix sometimes. So... you know, and even the star rating on Netflix, that's not an amalgam of all the ratings people have given. It's what Netflix thinks you would rate the film based on your tastes and your ratings that you've done before.
Huh.
So, you know, whenever I see like, oh, trending recommended film, What the Health or Forks Over Knives, I do try and take a little bit of grain of salt because I know that it's tailored to my tastes.
Although What the Health would definitely not recommend you take it with that grain of salt.
Certainly don't wash it down with a shot of oil. Oh, Penn Jillette. I feel like we have to mention him on every single episode going forward now. It's become a running joke. Anyway, so this film has, against our intuition, certainly seems to be a vegan maker. Now, we have to acknowledge that a lot of people will watch footage of what happens to animals in agriculture and say they're going vegan, and maybe they do for a little while, and then they go back. And so, like, if you're emotional at this film, so many people cried at this film. Mm-hmm. I've seen so many people posting about that. And, you know, even the director, Bong Joon-ho, went vegan for about 2 months when he was researching this film and then slowly went back to it. So time will tell if this is a film that creates meaningful long-term change. But there is no denying that in the short term, at the very least, it has created a lot of people that are more interested in learning about veganism or vegetarianism and taking actions on those things. I found another article that was saying how PETA has been receiving a record number of requests for vegan starter kits since Oakjaw has come out. So it's like there's a lot of concrete data out there that suggests that Oakjaw is having a positive effect.
And it's whether or not I think the number of like lifetime vegans versus like vegan for 2 months. It's like, even though obviously I hope the number is more leaning more towards the lifetime vegans, it's certainly creating more of a stir surrounding this issue than if it didn't exist, or than going to watch, say, Baby Driver or some other movie like that. Great movie.
Good movie. I wish someone would do a review of that film.
But you know what I mean? It's like, because I don't think, even though we did have some criticisms of the movie, overall, I think it has a positive impact. And even if first, like nothing, no singular piece of vegan media or vegan activism or pamphlets or whatever it is, or Batman lights, is going to get everybody to be on board. So it's like, it's obviously, if we read through these tweets, there's going to be people like you said, great movie, but I'm still not vegan. It's like, it's impossible for, I would think, for one single thing to affect everyone in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's positive because, like I said, we did have criticisms, but nothing was so intense that this would have a negative impact on people's views of veganism, or it would promote veganism in a way that we feel is not constructive or something like that.
So starting from this point on, we're going to talk about plot details from Oakjaw. We're also going to be talking about details from What the Health. So if you haven't seen those films, one, you probably won't get nearly as much out of this discussion, but definitely go check them out and know that we will be not going to really be talking about too many plot details, but there's going to be some. So, you know, I think that I have to disagree with you there, Paul, in that I think that Oakjaw did have many instances of promoting veganism or promoting a view of animals that is counter to like total liberation, animal liberation, in that it was very welfarist. It was just, to me, upon further reflection, taking in other people's reviews, thinking about the film more, and then also seeing even more interviews with Bong Joon-ho, you know, essentially it kind of feels like one of those instances where it's like, hey, the people on the left are just as extreme as the people on the right. And, you know, kind of like when you punch a Nazi, you're as bad as a Nazi kind of thing. And like, let's all be in the center. And Mija is presented as the center because the ALF members are presented as this, you know, in general, we view them as good guys, but they're also infringing on Mija. They're using an animal for their own benefit. At one point, Paul Dano is going to hit Oakjaw. And then you have the corporation over there who they're trying to feed the world, but they're also doing some really horrible stuff to do it. And it's kind of like both sides are bad. If you go too far on one end or the other, you should be right in the middle. And the middle is consume less, think about where your meat comes from, and like that's sensible. And I get that reaction from people when I talk about veganism doing outreach, and people are like, well, isn't that extreme? Shouldn't we just purchase from cage-free, local, organic, grass-fed, et cetera, et cetera? Shouldn't we just be eating less meat? Isn't it throwing the baby out with the bathwater, the baby driver out with the bathwater? If you get rid of this whole system, you're not going to affect anything if you just totally remove your money altogether. You know, if you want to actually help animals, you got to spend your money purchasing, you know, quote-unquote humane products. And so I feel like the message of the film, even though Bong Joon-ho has said that his films aren't about messages, but about like, they're just about like the beauty. I saw the quote a while ago, but it's something along those lines. Like, I'm not trying to make a message film necessarily. And so to me, it almost feels like the most boring takeaway whatsoever, which is this very moderate one of hey, both sides are extreme. Find your middle ground. And as viewers of, as as the listeners know, I loved the film. I thought it was a great time. But the more I reflect on it from a message standpoint, from like a content standpoint, I do feel like it was very lacking. And I feel like it's not necessarily the view of veganism that we typically promote on the show and typically are aligning ourselves with.
I think your views might be becoming biased by reading too many of the director's like personal notes about it, because from the few that we talked about last time, it seems like what he was saying was exactly what you were saying, like the very moderate position, just like have respect for where your meat is coming from, eat less meat, try to be better for the environment. Like, I feel like that's not what most people will take away from watching the movie. Like, I feel like unless they go into it knowing that that's what he thinks, because I don't think that, because you were kind of saying what's the name of the corporation?
Mirando.
The Mirando. I was going to say Matilda. The Matilda Corporation. The Mirando Corporation and the ALF, yes, they're on opposite sides of the spectrum. I think that the Mirando Corporation is like way on one side of the, like way far down the spectrum and very much portrayed as the bad guys, greedy, evil. Whereas the ALF, I don't think it's like the way that they portray them is not, I don't feel like super extreme. And yes, they have character flaws. Yes, they do some questionable things, but overall, I think they are the good, like portrayed as good in the movie in general. And I think it would be unfair to say that they're like on opposite equal sides of the spectrum. And then in addition, I think Mija representing like kind of the middle moderate, even though we did have this kind of, we had this discussion when we were viewing it, like, oh, what's she eating at the end of the movie? Is she still eating chicken? Is she still eating meat? It's like, she's never really promoting, right? She's never really promoting eating meat.
I mean,
she's never promoting not eating meat.
Yes.
But she's never promoting eating meat.
Yeah. But the presence of Mija consuming meat is obviously an explicit condoning of the eating of meat.
You're talking about the beginning of the movie?
Yeah.
But that's because the character arc.
Yeah.
A character arc that is not actually like explained out and is maybe just very alluded vague. To.
Yes. Someone, my partner actually pointed out that they show the grandfather eating a stalk of asparagus at the end, which I didn't really pick up on, but they also show like the ALF member that refused to eat before eating asparagus. And so it's like, that's kind of a tie-in to say like, well, the ALF member is vegan, then maybe the grandpa's vegan now.
Oh, it's a pro asparagus movie.
Yes. I'm all for asparagus, but so, I mean, again, I didn't catch it after two viewings of the film. And if I didn't catch it, Paul, no, you know, but it's like there are a lot of subtle things to suggest it. And obviously Bong Joon-ho doesn't want to hit people over the head with a message. As he said, that's not his intent. So, but I still feel like it's vague enough that it could be open to interpretation. But to go back to your point that I am sort of really reading into things, I agree with you entirely, because we have this proof that look at all these people that say they're going vegan because of this film. So even though I'm sitting here from my, you know, being 10 years vegan and analyzing the film and this thing isn't totally perfect, but look at all the good effect that it's having, even though I think that perhaps it's putting a message of portrayal of veganism out there that's not exactly what we want. And that's kind of the core of what I want to get at with this discussion is, should we still promote films even if they aren't totally in line with our activism?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say this. I think that if at the beginning or the end of the movie, Bong Joon-ho came out and he said, hey, I'm Bong Joon-ho, director of Okja. Eat less meat. You can still eat meat, but eat less meat. I think if he came out and said like that was his feelings about this piece of art that he made,
mm-hmm.
I would be less likely. I would say, hey, this is a great movie. Just don't watch the end. Don't watch the post-credit sequence.
Yeah.
If that was the case, I would very much be very much less likely to recommend the movie. So even though like I know that that's how he feels about it because he's written those things elsewhere, I think most people, the majority of people, aren't going to do that sort of research to figure that out. And the, and even if they did, by the time that they did see that, like, they would maybe have already had some feelings change within them to kind of hopefully prompt some change in their, in their lifestyle.
Yeah.
So, because I think, like I've been saying, I think we've become biased about the movie, even if it's just slightly, because we know what his intention was versus how people who are just blank slates are gonna what they're gonna pick up.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. And again, the proof is in the vegan pudding or the reducetarian pudding, that there is a lot of people saying, I'm going vegan because of this. Now, obviously, vegan organizations and people that are putting out these articles are cherry-picking responses, and I am not combing through that Oakjaw hashtag on Twitter. I look at it a little bit, yeah. But they're finding these really positive responses, and who knows if the vast majority of people are watching it and having zero response to it. I mean, I'm sure most people watch it, and they're like, that was a good movie, made me a little sad, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing, as many people do after they read a leaflet or they watch a film or whatever it might be. And some people do change. And yeah, like you said, everything is not going to reach everyone. So we need a variety. We need a diversity of tactics. You know, and obviously there could be a lot of tweets out there that aren't getting reposted that are like, I'm going to eat less meat because of Oakjaw, or I'm going to go buy grass-fed beef now because of Oakjaw. I actually posted a article on our Facebook that was from a pig farmer who was formerly vegan, and it was kind of their review of Oakjaw. And they really backed up the fears that we had in our initial review two episodes ago, that people would take it to mean that you have to support, you know, local agriculture. This person actually very much put forward that idea that I just mentioned of, if you really care about animals, you should be paying for them to be killed in a way that you think is kind. Because if you don't do that, then the people that are going to pay for them to die are heartless monsters, and it's just going to be the worst death for them possible. So to me, I was like, oh, this is my confirmation bias. Like, this confirms my fears about the movie. And who knows how many tweets like this are out there.
Yeah. Interestingly, though, I'm trying to think back of the movie. There's nothing that explicitly promotes a better way to buy the meat. Like, the whole movie is focusing on, like, this, like, the Mirando Corporation is producing these pigs. Here's how they're producing them. Here's how they're slaughtering them. This is what's going on with that. And that's bad. It never kind of, what's the Whole Foods movie?
At the Fork.
Like, that's kind of, even though I think we watched it and maybe disagreed, but I feel like the purpose of that was to be like, hey, here's some bad ways that are being, like, the Mirando Corporation. It's like, hey, here's how these animals are being produced and it's terrible. And here's a better, more humane way of producing them. I think it would have been more of a confirmation of what that article, what you were just talking about, it would promote that idea more, I should say, if the movie in some places somehow said, like, oh, and because of this undercover investigation, Mirando Corporation is getting shut down and all these super pigs are going to be moved to local farms, and it's going to show them, like, really happy on these farms and not show them, like, being slaughtered or anything afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that would have been people being like, oh, I got to go buy local. I got to go buy humane grass fed. So it's like, maybe it's confirmation bias of people who are already of the mindset, like, or if you are a local farmer, I think you would watch that and be like, yes, this movie is anti
factory farming.
Factory farming. GMOs. Yeah. So it's like, that's good for me. I don't know if that's how, to me, it doesn't seem like most people would come away with that idea though.
Fair enough. So I feel like there's, when we talk about imperfect films, imperfect activism, as we're kind of framing this discussion, there's obviously a sliding scale of imperfection. And I think that Oakjaw is on the lower end of those things, and that we can pick out a lot of things that don't align theoretically with our views of veganism, or at least mine. And then there might be films that we think are, like, more problematic. And I think that, you know, we, to bring in another film, What the Health, that just came out on Netflix, is a film that we were pretty favorable for, but did have a lot of problems with, you mm-hmm. more so than I. And I think since the film has come out and I've seen more reviews and dissections and people looking at the facts, I have, in my view, have become less favorably inclined towards What the Health.
Yeah.
And like the science and facts and views of veganism that it puts forward. So if we're talking about this scale, I feel like Oakjaw's on one end and What the Health is further towards the end of the more imperfect
yeah.
thing.
You know, it's, you know who's on the very far end of that.
I can't imagine who. Recently retired activist, perhaps. And similarly to Oakjaw, I have seen a flood of people saying, I'm going vegan because of What the Health.
Yeah.
I've seen friend of the show, Tony Okamoto, interviewed all the way back in episode 3, I believe, who runs Plant Based on a Budget, who is featured in the film. And she has said she has gotten a flood of inquiries of people checking out her website saying that they came there because of What the Health. They want to go vegan because of What the Health. And I've seen other people posting similar stories. So What the Health is a film that, you know, we kind of said it presents some maybe questionable science mm-hmm. And certainly presents veganism as this thing that's going to cure you and get you off all of your medication in 2 weeks. And it's this miracle thing. And literally anything else involving health is like meaningless. But it's having an effect. It's getting people to go vegan. So if I was to sum up or guess what our takeaway was from our little Oakjaw portion, was not perfect, but still a good thing to recommend that people watch. Do you feel the same way about What the Health? Do you think, oh, it's getting people to go vegan, so it doesn't matter that there's all these things that we think are kind of problematic?
I think even though there was a lot of, there were criticisms and critiques we had about What the Health, just purely by what the nature of what type of movie it is, makes it more along that sliding spectrum of like maybe slightly more towards the less likely to recommend, if only because, and it's not only because this, but if only because it is promoting veganism from a health, like it's promoting veganism because it is healthy, versus Oakjaw, which is promoting veganism from like the animal ethics standpoint, which is what Andy and I, not speak for you, Andy, but it's what Andy and I, that's how we want to promote our veganism. So just from the fact that What the Health, even if it was the perfect health documentary for veganism, it still would have been, for me, lower than Oakjaw, because I want people to become vegan. In the end, for the animals, it does not matter why people are vegan, but it seems to me like people are going to be more likely to stay vegan if it aligns with their, if their lifestyle is aligning with their ethics, versus if this thing they're doing because it's like, oh, I want to shed a few pounds, so I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
So purely on that notion, What the Health is a little further down that scale of less likely to recommend.
But you would still recommend.
I would still recommend it. Yeah. I would, I don't know. It's to me, it's almost like it's like a scare tactic type thing. It's like, it's going to scare people into being vegan, which I guess if that works, then maybe. But again, I don't have any sort of data on how long people are going to stay vegan if that's the reason why they switch.
Yeah. And, you know, my fear is that people watch this, they get jazzed up on this message and they think, I'm going to reverse my diabetes, I'm going to get off these pills and all my medications
in 2 weeks.
And 2 weeks go by and that doesn't happen for them. Maybe they've even gained a little bit of weight. They don't feel better. They feel slightly better, but they haven't reversed everything. They go a month or two and they still haven't gotten to those things. And then they just abandon it.
Or they go off their medication and things get worse because that's what the medication was preventing. And now they think they'll link that to veganism.
And then they make some post saying, I'm not vegan anymore and veganism didn't work for me.
And it made things worse for me.
Yeah. Yeah. A la certain celebrities that.
But I guess what we were just talking about, how with Oakjaw, we were just saying like, well, not every piece of media, not every pamphlet is going to get everyone to go vegan. Do we need What the Health for those people that as many videos of slaughterhouses, as many Oakjaws as we show them, as many pamphlets as we read them, do not care about animals, do we need the what the healths, the forks over knives, the cows? Maybe it's the environment thing that's going to get them, the cowspiracies. Do we need those then, even though that's why Andy and I don't selfishly maybe don't want, that's not why we want them to go vegan. If that's the only thing that's going to get them to go vegan, do we need those then?
I mean, honestly, the only reason that I would kind of say yes is that, and we've talked about this many times before, but if someone stops eating animal products for whatever reason, a health reason, and then they're presented with an ethical argument, they're less likely to feel defensive because they're already not doing the thing. And I know many people whose that's what their journey was, is they did it because they wanted to get healthier, lose weight, or whatever it was. And then, like, over the course of that initial, you know, trial starter period, they also learned about the ethics, and now they're straight up vegan for the animals.
Yeah.
But the health brought them to it. You know, I guess I'm still wary because I feel like we don't need to, you know, the arguments for veganism, even from a health standpoint, are like pretty compelling. I don't think, and I post an article about this on our Facebook page, I don't think there's any way that anyone could conclusively say that a vegan diet, whatever that is, because veganism is, you can eat a plant-based diet as diverse as, you know, what does a meat eater eat? It's like, well, they could eat a wide variety of things.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's no real way to say that a vegan diet is 100% the best thing. There's no way to say that if you have a little bit of meat or eggs or whatever in your diet, that that is going to be horrible for your health.
Mm-hmm.
And the article I posted was saying, like, you know, it's certainly a vegan diet is among the contenders for what could be one of the healthiest. It's a likely contender given what we know. Yeah. But to, like, truly test these things, we would need, you know, like, multiple lifetimes of studies and people from birth following specific diets and never deviating and all of these things. It's like really impossible to say. So I guess, you know, the arguments for veganism are compelling enough on their own without exaggerating, without making big claims, that I worry about people who come into it under the guise of a big claim and then feeling like they've been lied to.
Yeah. I feel you. I agree.
So I guess essentially we're both saying we would potentially recommend these films to people or not talk them out of seeing them.
I think I would. I have and will recommend Oakjaw.
Mm-hmm.
And if I think that what the health is going to be the thing that gets someone to start thinking about this, I would recommend that to them too. Like if someone's talking to me about, like if I see someone at the gym or something and they're talking to me about nutrition and they're saying, like, you know, I don't know, like, oh, I need this eggs and this whey protein and blah, 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 blah. Like, then it might, if that would then relate to the conversation, because if they're talking to me about nutrition, like it wouldn't make sense for me to then bring up animal ethics. Like that has no relevance to the conversation, you know?
It's always relevant.
But that might be,
it's always relevant.
That might be the time when I would bring up what the health.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Like, essentially, it's a tool in the tool belt. If someone's looking for resources on health and they want documentaries, it's there on Netflix. I think, for me, my recommendation to watch it, if they're like, is there any good health documentaries, would be, you know, check out What the Health. These are my thoughts on the film. These are my caveats. It presents veganism as this magic cure-all. Don't expect it to do that, but it will still get you jazzed up on the health benefits of eating a whole food plant-based diet.
Yeah.
You know, it's like one of those, whereas like Oakjaw for me is a film that I could just be like, yeah, just go watch it. Like I wouldn't be like, now just so you know, when she buys Oakjaw with the pig at the end, like that's kind of sending a message that's counter to liberation. Or, you know, like I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, but like What the Health, I would feel like I had to have a conversation with the person beforehand and like give some caveats.
I agree. I think that would be, for every health documentary that we've reviewed, there would probably be caveats at the beginning of me recommending them to someone.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, so I see a lot of people that are like, everyone needs to watch What's the Health. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen this, but some vegan advocates will buy little like address stamps and they'll stamp like Cowspiracy on dollar bills or I know someone did like Earthlings. And at Vegetarian Summerfest, there was people that were stamping whatthehealth.com on stamps. And I'm like, I don't know if that would be like, if I had one film, if I had one website to give to someone, I don't think it would be What the Health. It would
probably be Earthlings.
Well, so Earthlings, I know some people that were stamping that, but Earthlings, as we know, is no longer free anymore. So now I'm like less inclined. I'm sure people could find it for free somewhere, but earthlings.com, I'd be less inclined to direct people towards that website.
You'll stamp like megaupload.com/earthlings.
Footlocker earthlings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not that we know anything about those websites, but yeah. Paul.
Yes, Andy.
This is, I guess, like everything. There's this kind of like degrees, there's sliding scales, there's gray areas. And like any film recommendation has to come with consideration of who the person is, what they're interested in, mm-hmm. where they are in their thought process. You know, it seems like it's hard to blanketedly recommend something, but I feel like in general, Oakjaw is a film that if someone likes stuff of that style, I think I could safely recommend it and hope that it would give them a pro-animal feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all y'all listen out there, let us know what you think about this. Like,
that's the most positive thing Andy's ever said about a movie.
All y'all listening out there, let us know what you think. Are these films that you would recommend? Is there a line that a film has to cross before you would stop promoting it? Do you give people caveats and warnings and have conversations with them about the films they're seeing? Do you not? You can send us an email, thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. And go ahead and go over to iTunes. Give us a rating. Give us a review if you're feeling so kind.
So, Andy, what do you got coming up?
Yeah, Paul, this weekend, big weekend, July 22nd, I'll be at Compassion Fest in Hamden, Connecticut with a friend of the show, Marino from Yeah Dog, will be there serving up delicious dogs. Like Noetter's going to be there. July 23rd, I'll be at the Vegan Pop-Up in Asbury Park along with Vegan Treats and a couple other great vendors. August 3rd through the 6th, Paul and I will both be at the Animal Rights Conference in Washington, D.C. August 12th, we'll be at the Hudson Valley Vegan Food Festival in Newburgh, New York. And that
is that one of those tongue twisters? Newburgh, New York.
Unique, New York. So you can find dates, deets, and links for all those events at CompassionCo.com. This is CompassionCo.com. And if you go there, you can also find a bunch of other events that I and sometimes Paul will be at all the way through November. And at any of those events, you can find me behind the Compassion Company table.
Give them a big old high five and bring them a hot dog.
Literally everyone should bring me a hot dog. You know, thinking about this show, there's a lot of imperfect activism out there. I don't know if there's anything that's perfect other than the following seven words.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off.
And he said, you know, it's called How Not to Die, not how not how wait how to not die.
Last week, Argentinian,
and talks about how the ban has been overturned, and then says the ban violates the band.
An article from NBC News from way back then.
Is that an official date?
Man, I'm sweating like an Oakjaw over here.